Welcome to the Aussie Villains Podcast. This is Paul, joined by first time on the podcast, Nick, the Aussie Villains Podcast. We will also be recording tomorrow, and we're doing the post-Chelsea game, so hopefully that is 3 points in the bag as well. This is the Aussie Villains Podcast with Paul and Nick. And thank God we're not going down to Chelsea because it's at Villa Park. Villains Podcast. It's Paul, regular host. We got Nick. How you going, Nick?
I'm good. How are you going?
Oh, mate, getting there, but just letting people know that the Aussie Villains Podcast is back. We've got Josh Donishy, and now we've got Nick as well. So Nick will be joining, hopefully, as one of the co-hosts. It'll be completely up to him. But Nick, tell us a bit about why you follow the Villa.
Okay, so I'm based in Sydney, Australia. Been a Villa fan since the early 2000s as a youngster, young kid growing up. I'm part of that generation that's never seen us win a trophy, so I'm 30 years old. How I got into Villa, it's actually a very crazy story. So I'm of a Greek background, then I went back to where I'm from, the island I'm from in Greece, in 2001. So back then I would have been 8 years old. A lot of English tourists visit the island over the summer months, and Villa, you know, football shirts for sale and that, and got a Villa jersey, and it all started from there. Then I started getting properly into it probably from that early high school onwards. So I would have been about 12, 13 years old. That also coincided with the first Martin O'Neill year. And that's when I started watching every game, basically.
So it was about the jersey, because that was pretty similar for me. I've told jersey. The story a million times, so I won't bore people with that one. But Nick, so you're based in Sydney, and do you get to, you know, share many nights or early mornings with any other Sydney-based Villa fans?
No. I know there's quite a few around, and we've got our groups and all that on social media. But no, just pretty much watch the games on my own. You know what it's like, those early hours of the morning or the late night.
I've got 20 years on you, so over 7,000 more days. So I definitely know what those early mornings are like. So I've got a market stall I run on Sunday. So tomorrow morning, as I set up the market stall, I'll have the game on probably on the iPad and be walking around with the headphones in. So cannot wait, mate. But the season so far has to have exceeded any expectations you had.
Never in my wildest dreams did I think it would pan out like this. I remember listening to you in the early parts of the season when you were saying we might get third or fourth and you were confident. I'm thinking, are we seriously going to do that? I had a good feeling. So in preseason, my expectation, I had us to finish around sixth and win the Conference League. I never thought we'd be breaking into the top four this season. So, yeah, definitely exceeded all expectations. And not only that, it's the style. It's the way we're doing it, the style of football we're playing. I've been saying for a while now, Emery is the best thing that's happened to this club in my time.
Yeah, I'm going to actually say that I think the co-owners and the, you know, everything from the financial that they've set up with Chris Heck to getting Unai Emery, I actually think the co-owners are the best thing that's ever happened. And yes. And then I can see absolutely why people would say Emery, but it doesn't happen without really visionary owners, and they are.
No, spot on. Well, you look at Wes. Wes Edens with Milwaukee Bucks, how he's transformed them.
Absolutely.
And Nassef's an experienced businessman. He's a part owner of Adidas as well and all that. So they know what they're doing. They coughed up their hard-earned at the start, and they got us promoted in that. You know, Dean Smith exceeded expectations, and here we are today. Now Emery's exceeded expectations this season.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And Dean Smith, you know, like, might not have had the greatest record of any of our managers, but he got the heart and soul back. He got people believing in the club again. So every manager, even Steven Gerrard has his part to play, because he was so negative about, you know, we're playing Chelsea, we shouldn't expect to beat them and everything.
Remember that.
We got our hopes up. We got players like Coutinho, and then, you know, he talked us down. So every one of the managers plays a part.
Yeah, you know, wasn't for that, remember that shocking 3-0 loss early last season, Fulham away.
And it wasn't just 3-0. It was lacking everything that we'd ever want. There was no effort. We were resigned to lose that by 3 or more.
Even so, after that, when Emery first came in, remember not from some people, the criticisms that you'd hear, the people holding their breath at the ground, and some criticisms online, like the playing out from the back, the high line and all that. But now, over a year on, it's an incredible team. And I think we're going to get better. That's the scary part. Where are we going to be in a few years' time?
Yeah, and it's all to do with you know, obviously, we just said about Emery, but Emery set up his style where the players coming in are going to know what's expected of them. And I think Rodgers is a fantastic example of that, right? He's almost seamlessly come into the team and knew what he was expected of him, and that only comes from great management.
Oh, he's a phenomenal player, Rodgers. That game, I think, was Luton away his first game. I think it might have been. I remember getting up to watch that game. It was an early morning kickoff here. Oh, must have been like 4:30 a.m., whatever it was. And he came on as a sub, but he got subbed off. And some people were criticising his defensive work, but I saw from that game, I thought to myself, there's a player there, and he's just gotten better and better and better. And I think the sky's the limit for Rodgers.
Well, Josh said the same thing, and Josh actually said, you know, in a podcast last week that, you know, he could see a certain other player at our club, a certain Ramsey, potentially making way for Rodgers. But that's what the great clubs have, competition for spots.
Yeah, no, I did hear Josh say that, and honestly, I'm inclined to agree with him, because that goal he scored, we'll get on to the Bournemouth game, but that goal he scored was just incredible. And it's not like he was shocked, like he was so, you know, cool, calm, collected. He knew what he was doing.
He stepped inside and just slammed it home. And, you know, we have needed that kind of player or that kind of play for so many years. And now, you know, last year I was really excited when Bailey came on board. And then for me, and I still won't step down on this, I thought initially his lack of effort chasing back, and even with Emery, the lack of effort chasing back and stuff, I thought really hurt him. But now Bailey's going both ways. Rodgers, who we weren't even sure he'd even be in the team, is now looks like he could easily start in the 11. And, man, the confidence through the group just must be absolutely sky high.
It's crazy to think, like, that Bournemouth game, we went a goal down. And you're thinking, like, the Villa of old, you'd start to get antsy, that, you know, that squeaky bum time sort of thing. But we were so in control, even at a goal down, even though we'd played the midweek, a very hard midweek European game, that you knew we'd find a way to fight our way back into it. It was just inevitable. As you said, the squad's buzzing, everyone's buzzing. How good is it welcoming the players in, the fans, before the game?
Oh, look, and definitely that, and that's something. Look, we've got the passion back. We've got the fire in the stands, which every good club needs. And you talked about that Bournemouth game, and we went 1-0 down, and I'm just like, oh, that goal by Rodgers just before halftime, I thought changed everything. Once we went in 1-1, I was very confident.
You're spot on.
We had gone down 1-0. Maybe we would have eked a draw. Who knows? But that goal for Rodgers honestly changed everything.
Honestly, great minds think alike. You basically just took the words out of my mouth. If it was 1-0, maybe I would have started to worry a bit at halftime. That goal before halftime, you just knew we'd find a way to win it after that.
And look, I thought Bournemouth were really good value. They played some good football, but as the longer the game went, it was just a beautiful thing to watch. Like, to be relaxed in a game has started to become something synonymous with Villa, whereas in the past you were talking about squeaky bum time and being nervous. There'll be games where that happens, but it feels less and less. We feel like fourth at this point of the season does not lie.
No, no way. And if it wasn't, like, again, because this is Emery's no-excuse culture, no one in the media brings this up, the injuries we've had. Who else has had 3 ACL injuries in one season? And it's not just the ACLs, but the Ramsey missing virtually 3/4 of a season, the Luiz suspension at a crucial time, and other injuries. Now Moreno's out. We're down to one left back, for example. It's crazy. And Emery doesn't allow excuses to be used, and that's why I don't think the media talks about it. Imagine where we would have been if injuries were just a tad kinder.
Well, look, I look at third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. So Liverpool, Villa, Tottenham, Man U, and Newcastle. And every one of those teams has something in common. Massive players missing. Like all year, those teams have been injured. So it's been a remarkable effort by all. You know, people might say Liverpool have fallen off. They're only 3 points off the top. And they might have fallen off, but geez, not bad falling off and finishing third in the Premier League.
No, exactly. Exactly. And but we're not far off them. That's scary.
Well, I don't think we're far off Liverpool. I definitely think we are a fair bit away at the moment from Arsenal and definitely from City.
Oh, for sure.
It only takes a few more signings and you know, a few more changes, and that gap will close. And it's so vital, mate, that we finish in that fourth spot, because the coefficient means that fifth will not be good enough for Champions League now.
I was monitoring that coefficient all along the last few months, thinking surely it's going to be in the bag. And then it came up. I remember it would have been the playoff round, so like in the new year, probably February time. You're thinking Germany's going to run out of teams and England's just going to cruise into that second spot and fifth will get Champions League. How wrong I was.
But you know what? Isn't it going to be even sweeter if we do? And good chance that we can. It's up to us. But if we do finish fourth, doesn't that feel sweeter than getting that Champions League spot? Kind of not by default, but by default.
For sure, because you would have had people saying, "Yeah, but you got Champions League football the year they expended it, and they allowed a fifth English team in." For sure, that would have happened. Yeah, so.
Look, Tottenham have two games in hand, but they're 5 goals behind us and 6 points. The pressure's on Tottenham. So I do want to have a quick look at them at the moment, because they have, when we looked back a couple of weeks ago, you would have said, oh man, our run-in's harder, but beating Arsenal changed everything. And then Tottenham getting thumped by Newcastle. So let's have a quick look at them, mate, because they are our only contender for fourth. So they've got Arsenal tomorrow night. Arsenal have absolutely everything to play for. By the time they're playing tomorrow night, we're either 6, 7, or 9 points ahead of them.
It's remarkable. And honestly, I think with Tottenham, as you said, yeah, they've got the games in hand, but they've got to win them and overturn the goal difference. And they're playing the top three that have it all to play for.
Well, let's have a look. So they've got Arsenal tomorrow night.
And that's at home. Arsenal's at home.
No, Tottenham's Tottenham are at home for sure.
Yeah.
They've then got Chelsea. Now, who knows? We play Chelsea. Chelsea could shape the four, really, couldn't they? They play us and Tottenham within the space of a week. They then have Liverpool away. They then play Burnley. And look, everyone's, would think, Burnley, there's not an issue there. Burnley theoretically could still be, they're only 3 points out of relegation at the moment, so they'll be scrapping for their lives. And then they've got, obviously, their last game is against Sheffield United, but they've got City before that. This is an unbelievably hard run for Tottenham right now.
Yeah, very, very. And as you said, with Burnley, and it's more so Burnley, we won't know how big that game's going to be for them until the time comes. They could be mathematically relegated by then for all we know, or they have it all to play for like now. Hopefully it goes our way and they've got it all to play for.
Well, look, with tomorrow morning, 5 o'clock Eastern side, 3 o'clock in WA, I think 5:30 in Northern Territory in South Australia. So there you go. I think I've got it covered. I've probably got someone wrong there. But taking on Chelsea at home tomorrow, I just love the fact this is at home.
Yep, and the fans are going to be out again in full force before the game. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff local time. Villa Park under the lights, as they say. Villa Park atmosphere has copped it, over the years, but it's going to be buzzing, I think, for this game again, like Bournemouth was, to be fair.
Oh, look, it certainly is. And look, our form at home, I know we had that unbelievable run, but we have 38 points at home, 12 wins, 2 draws, only 3 losses in our 17 games. And it's interesting because we're fourth on the ladder with home form. Liverpool with the best form at home with only 1 loss. So you are where you are. you know, you are meant to be where you're meant to be. So, we've only had three losses all year, plus 20 goal difference at home. So I'm expecting the crowd just gets absolutely behind us tomorrow, which haven't always done. We haven't done that very well in the previous few years, to be honest.
I think it's going to be – everyone's going to be up for it for this game. From now on, I think from now until the end of the season, this is our second last home game in the league.
Yep.
Everyone's going to be up for it.
Well, Dougie Lee should be back in the squad. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to have a look at your lineup, but, I mean, Emmy will be missing the first leg, which we'll cover in a moment, of our semi-finals due to the funny – how many cards did he get in the end? Yeah, two cards in that quarterfinal. So Martinez will be there. We'd still expect Cash, Konza, Torres and Dean.
Yeah, I mean, well, Dean for sure. Pau Torres for sure. The only talking point there is, do you bring Diego Carlos back in, who really, before he came out, didn't put a foot wrong, and you shift Konza out to right back, or do you play your more natural sort of right back in Cash and Konza, where he thrives as a center back? I'd be inclined to go Cash right back, Konza center back, as you said.
I think a really good point you made there. I think Cash has got his detractors, and we know that, you know, there's some deficiencies in his game, but he's the more natural player out there. And I think you can have four or three really big defenders, especially when you're playing a high line. I think we have to have Cash there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
So I'm not sure about the midfield at the moment, but, you know, Bailey has to be either there or pushing up. McGinn, Louise, Rogers, yeah, we'd have to have Rogers with the injuries. And then Tillemans would be fitting in there somewhere. So whether we play a 4-5-1, something like that, Tillemans or Bailey floating just ahead, supporting Watkins.
There's been a bit of talk, Abe, because we've won our last two league games without Douglas Luiz. There's been talk, would you bring him straight back in? Again, personally, he comes straight back in. He dipped. His form slightly dipped before the suspension, but he's in my best 11 at the moment every single day of the week. So for me, he comes straight in and Tielemans next to him.
Yeah, so you would have Louise coming in, because I would. It's such a huge game.
Yeah.
I think his form had dropped off slightly, but I think he's going to be so fired up to be in this game. I would be really shocked if he doesn't start.
No, he'll be there. He's got to be there.
That's a tough midfield now, isn't it? McGinn, Louise, Rogers. I mean, Tillemans, who's had his detractors, he's had a fabulous season in my mind.
I think in my eyes now, the second half of the season is definitely in my eyes. He's overtaken Pau Torres as our signing of the season.
I'm still a bit uncertain about that, because I think Torres has been absolutely fabulous.
Oh, to the way we play, yeah.
I think it's a flip of the coin on that one, to be honest. I love Torres' signing. I think it gives us the flexibility down back. And look, what a shout-out to Konza. I mean, a couple of years ago, people were talking about him, you know. Oh, I'm not saying everyone, but people were definitely worried about Konza. And Konza's just become such a comfortable player on the ball. He's so confident now.
Yeah, no, I've always liked Konza. I think the England call-up came way too late, if we're being honest.
26 years of age, I think it's the right age.
His form warranted one like a year ago. That's what I meant. He's been playing well for a while now. Even before Emery, he had his odd game where he underperformed. But from the Dean Smith era, you could see the potential in him.
Well, selfishly, I'm happy that he didn't get the call up. I think it's given him more time to assimilate. But if you have a look at our team now, mate, you've got Martinez, Argentinian, goalkeeper. You've got Cash, who plays for Poland, Konza, England. You got Torres, Dean. I mean, there's internationals all through that team now, which you'd expect for one of the top level Premier League teams.
Yeah. And not only they're experienced, big personalities. We're talking guys like McGinn and Emmy, of course, who in my eyes, he's the best keeper in the world. Big personalities, big leaders. And that's what our opponents tonight don't really have, apart from a couple of guys in Chelsea.
Well, look, Chelsea's got a team on paper and money-wise that is, you know, but they're not a team. They're a whole heap of individuals who can definitely do damage. But they don't I don't really want to say this. Palmer has had a fabulous season, let's be honest. But there's been people who've, you know, bagged out Gallagher. I think he's played pretty well for him. But their lineup doesn't stress me out too much. I think it's really, really overpriced squad there as well.
Yeah, no, they are a true Jekyll and Hyde team this season. Like, 1 week they can be really good, as we saw in that 6-0 home win over Everton. Even they lost to Man City, but they weren't too bad performance-wise. Then they got thumped by Arsenal 5-0. But Cole Palmer was out in that game.
Yeah, and Palmer will be back in, but they have a lot of injuries as well at the wrong time of year.
Yeah.
And a certain ex-Villa player who looks like he's not happy in the team at the moment and may want to leave at the end of the season.
I think I could be wrong. I might have read he's out as well for this game.
Yeah, he is. He's definitely out. Chilwell's out. Chuck is out. They've got a fair few injuries at the moment. So they'll be stretched, certainly, to be able to match our... I mean, it's unbelievable with the injuries that we've got at the moment. Marino, Kamara, Buendia, Ramsey, Zaniolo, Mings. You look at all the injuries and yet you kind of feel like we're not missing too many players.
No, that's down to Emery.
Absolutely it is, because it's style over individuals. The people come in, they look, I'm going to put you under the pump right now. This is your debut on the pod. You have to do it. Your score, Aston Villa, Chelsea, tomorrow morning, 5 a.m.
You don't know with Chelsea, because they did knock us out of the FA Cup two legs. We beat them 1-0 at Stamford Bridge. They're winless in their last, I think it's 3 or 4 away games. Look, I'm going to go Villa win. We've got it all to play for. It's at home. I think if Chelsea plays at their best and we play at our best, we'll win. I'll go Villa 2-1. I'll go an Ollie Watkins brace, and he breaks that 20-goal mark and the first Aston Villa player to ever score 20 or more goals in a Premier League season.
Yes, and I believe we may have called that at the start of the season as well. I've been on I'm not a punter, so I've been stupid this year. I could have easily cleaned up on Villa, but look, I'm actually going to go 4-0.
Really?
Absolutely. We're going to start well. And I think Chelsea has nothing to play for. And I think once we get a couple up, they're just going to... I think they're going to drop off. I don't think they're really playing for their manager at the moment. I think we're going to go 4-0 and really put the pressure on Tottenham. Not only 9 points clear, but goal difference as well. Now, I've got my goal scorers, and you're not going to like this. I've got Tielemans, Rodgers, McGinn and Bailey.
No worries.
Watkins with 3 assists.
Well, he's leading the assists at the moment across the whole
world. Oh, yeah, yeah. He'll go close, but he's in such form that they're all going to swarm him, and he's just going to lay off a couple, and then one's going to be a beautiful through ball to Bailey. And Bailey, who's just become a finisher, hasn't he? I didn't think he had it in him, but Bailey has a chance to hit the double-double mark, mate, which...
That's crazy to think.
10 goals and 9 assists. What a season, and he's 26 years of age. I mean, mate, his market value, which I always try and track a little bit, he would have been worth 8 to 10 million a year or so ago, and they reckon he might be up to 50 or 60 million.
It's crazy. He was getting hounded out of the club virtually a year or so ago.
And mate, I was one of those losers.
Look, and, I wasn't sort of harsh. I was thinking if we get a good fee, I was thinking along the lines, if we can get 20, 25 million, sell him. That's what I was thinking. But it's incredible the way he's revived his Villa career. And as you said, a double-double in terms of goals and assists. And he's dangerous now on both feet. He does track back. He does the defensive work. The eye for goal. He scored big goals, like very, very important goals. Stepped up at crucial times. He's Ollie, for me so far, is our player of the year.
Yep.
Bailey has to be second or third.
I would go. I don't think I'll disagree with you too much. I think I would go for myself personally. Watkins. I would go Martinez, who I just think's pulled off save after save, and I think Bailey would be right there.
We've got the same order.
His best career was the year just before we signed him: 15 goals and 10 assists for Bayer Leverkusen. But that also included Europa League and the German Cup. But he scored 9 goals. nine goals and eight assists. So a very similar season to what he's having in the Premier League. See, in the Europa Conference League, he scored four for us as well. So in all competitions, he's got 14 goals and 12 assists for us this year.
That's remarkable. And there's always that saying with guys that come from the Bundesliga to the Premier League that it takes a bit of time to adjust, and the Bundesliga is more up and down, quicker in transition, and Bailey with his speed and all that. And I think that's very true in this case for him. Now he's properly adapted to the state of the Premier League.
I just want to say it on the pod. I apologise, Leon. I was one of your detractors. Not when you signed. If you went back and listened to our podcast, I was so super excited when he signed with us. But then, for me, it's always been about what you do when you don't have the ball. And I didn't see him making the runs I expected from a top player, and I didn't see him tracking back. Now he's doing everything you could ever want. I think what that means is when we're playing teams, you know, in the past, a few years ago, Nick, it was Jack Grealish or nothing, right?
Yeah.
Now you have to pick up a Ramsey. Now you have to pick up, obviously, Watkins, who just was unplayable the last few weeks. He was just unplayable. They have to pick up Tielemans from the runs. They have to pick up so many players now that I think we're very, very hard to plan against.
Even Diaby. So we talk about Douglas Luiz returning. That's going to force Emery into a real dilemma here. Someone's going to have to miss out. I wouldn't drop Rodgers. I'd be starting Rodgers. I'd be starting McGinn in the midfield, probably on the left. Either Diaby or Bailey would come off the bench for me. I'd be leaning towards Bailey start, Diaby coming on off the bench.
Can you have Diaby on?
You can.
With Bailey, Rodgers and McGinn, and Luiz come on and ease back into the game.
You probably could. It's crazy to think now that we've got that option.
And with all the injuries we've got, we've still got options. That is sensational, isn't it? Look, we have one of our biggest European games in a long, long time. So just go back. You've got us winning 2-1. I've got us winning 4-0. I think we can both concur that if tomorrow afternoon we're kicking back and we're relaxed, then doesn't matter what the scores were. We've got the 3 points. That's going to be the most vital thing.
And then pressure on Tottenham in the North London derby.
Huge pressure. Now, don't always ask people about their backgrounds. My background, I'm a bit of the Aussie mongrel, but my background's Swedish, Welsh is a big part of my kind of background. But, Nick, what would your background be?
I am Greek.
And I think that's a timely thing because this Friday, 5 o'clock again, we take on Olympiacos at home at Villa Park in one of our biggest games in a long, long, long time. I just can't wait for this one. Villa Park will be absolutely rocking.
Oh, this is going to be like no other. I've been waiting for this game for so long. Bring it on, especially against them of all teams. I'm a Panathinaikos supporter in Greece. This is our eternal enemy, our eternal rival in not only in football, in basketball, water polo, volleyball, the lot. Our eternal enemy coming to Villa Park in a European semi-final. It doesn't get better than this.
Well, there, and you can tell us a little bit more about that rivalry, but at the moment, you're sitting, you said Panathinaikos, is that correct?
Yeah, that's who I follow. So we're sitting second domestically, yes. And Olympiacos is in fourth with a game in hand.
They are fourth with a game in hand, but they're 4 points behind you and goal difference as well. But they look like they score a lot of goals.
The funny thing with Greece is that goal difference is as good as irrelevant. It's head to head.
Ah, I did not know that.
Yeah, that's just
we learned things on the Aussie Villain podcast.
Oh,
so have you guys travelled against Olympiacos this season?
So they've introduced the last 2-3 seasons. They've introduced what's called a playoff format at the end of the regular season. So they essentially split the league in half. So it's like the Premier League, you cut it in half where the top half fight for the league title, and then you got the bottom half fighting to avoid relegation.
Yeah. So the top...
Belgium, I think Belgium does it. Scotland might, Croatia might. Definitely Belgium does it, I know that.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah, I've just had a look at that. That's how bad I'm going at the moment. I did not know that.
What it is, it waters down the concept of a derby. Yep. Because you're playing the same teams. It's not only Olympiacos that we've got a rival with. They're our big and main and eternal rivals. But you're playing the same teams constantly. But it brings in more dollars, more viewership, more tension and all that. So that's the positive of it. And when you've got four teams fighting for the title that are so close to each other and very evenly matched, yeah, it's worked out well for them the last couple of seasons.
Well, look, it's going to be a fantastic atmosphere. They do look like they score a lot of goals. You know, the top four in Greece. I cannot speak of this season. I have not seen a minute. I'm not joking. It's just so hard to watch some of the leagues at the moment. Have you been able to watch many of the games?
I have a fair few, actually. As you said, you're pretty much right. Defensively, across the whole season, it's been their weakness, especially very early on in the season. That was their major weakness. They're onto their third manager, it's worth noting. So it's not like us with Emery. Look, that's common for Greek football. You'll go through, you know, two, three, maybe even four managers in a season. That's, you know, it's not a total shock. They've sort of found their man, though, with this guy in Mendilibar, someone that Emery will know quite well.
Yeah, come on. Give me his name. It's
Jose Luis Mendilibar.
I love that name. What a nice-sounding name.
Emery should know him very, very well. So they would have managed against each other in Spain regularly over the years. Emery's won the Europa League four times. This guy won it last season with Sevilla.
He's got a darn good resume. And there he's either played or been at so many clubs. Very, very – this is his first time, I believe, outside of Spain.
Yeah, and he's not young either.
Let's have a look. 63 years of age.
Yeah.
So he may not be young, mate, but he's not too much older than me, so I'm going to give him that. But he's been there for 15 matches of this season. He's won 11, drawn one, and three losses. So
the last few games, especially, he's turned them around. Going back to my team in Greece, Panathinaikos, we've played him a total of five times so far this season, with a sixth on the horizon, because we got drawn against them in the cup. So, essentially, the FA Cup or the League Cup. In the derbies, we've wiped the floor with them in the league. So the first game, again, not a total shock for Greek football. The match got abandoned at 1-1 due to one of our players getting hit with a firecracker.
Oh, my goodness. I knew it was going to be crowd issues.
Yeah, look, I don't think there will be. I'll get on to that. I think it's going to be all okay for this, you know, over the two legs with Villa. So first game, we ended up winning. It went to the courts. We won 3-0. That's in their DNA. That's their history, to win matches in court. So it's good to give them a taste of their own medicine. Then in the league, in the second game, behind closed doors, we beat them 2-0. Then recently we beat them 3-1. So we've wiped the floor with them in the league. We also knocked them out in the cup on penalties when we had 13 injuries and a centre back on debut playing striker. So Villa is light years ahead of Panathinaikos. In theory, Villa should have it much easier than Lille.
Well, I can tell you now, what an amazing, and I know they're your enemies, but 47 league titles, 18 runners-up, 8 cups. That's unbelievable.
Nah, look. Maybe others, a lot of Greeks will disagree with me, but a lot of them are tainted titles. as I said, in the courts, Nottingham Forest. Take Nottingham Forest, for example. They've been in the news recently with their controversial tweet about exploring their options with the VAR. I think it was, Stuart, I forget the surname, being a Luton fan, and that they were going to explore their options after they lost to Everton 2-0.
Stuart Atwell.
Yeah. So did you see that tweet from Forest?
I did see the tweet. Now, part of that tweet, I was like, okay, fair enough. This is the part I don't disagree with. When they're saying, look, we should have had decisions go our way, we don't think this is good enough, I think everyone would have said, yay, go, you know, go club. And then saying that they, you know, gone to PGMOL and said that, you know, he's a Luton fan, and then also saying we're going to explore our options. When they went to those two points, that was way too far. I would have been really embarrassed if Villa had done something similar.
So for us Greeks seeing that, and this is something that was noted on the Optus Sport podcast by Phil in London, Kitra Melides, who's also of Greek background. This is something we see regularly, like fortnightly, monthly in Greek football. Not only Olympiacos, but pretty much all clubs do this. They come out with statements like this and they blast the officiating. And you could tell that tweet had his fingerprints all over it. It's essentially word for word what Marinakis would do in Greece. The difference is it's not Greece, and he thinks he probably thought he could control the referees the way he did in Greece. Newsflash, it isn't.
Well, it's pretty interesting, mate, because when we have a look, I can't see where we've played them before in a game.
No, I don't think we ever have. And as for all the off-field stuff, I won't go into it with Olympiacos. They're the ownership, the club as a whole, very, very controversial. You guys can do your own research into them. I won't bore you with it. But you can. We have a saying in Greece, whoever loves football hates Olympiacos.
Oh, mate, I'll have to look into the history of that. Look, we're going to be without Martinez, obviously, with that second yellow in the penalty shootout. Whilst the cards will be started again in the semi-final stage, he will actually be suspended for the semi. So you'd have to think that Olsen will come in as keeper against Olympiacos.
Yeah, no, he'll come in. And you remember Olsen in his most recent game at the Etihad against Man City. It's not like he didn't really put a foot wrong. Those four goals, he couldn't have really done much to stop them.
No, I'm not as worried. For some reason, I'm not as worried. I would probably be, and this is not a good thing, Nick, I would probably be more worried if Olsen was playing against Chelsea tomorrow morning than I am with him against Olympiacos.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, definitely. Look, again, with Olsen, and the little sidetrack, a little side note, we'll just go on just on a tangent very quickly here. In the preseason, so in our Australian winter leading into the new season, we'll blast it like, how's Villa going to cope with the European commitments and playing two games a week? You remember all that, and the players have never coped it before. Olsen is just one of a few players that's played in Europe in the past in his career. Yeah. So is Leon Bailey, Diaby, Pau Torres. They've done it before, those guys, and we're managed by a four-time Europa League winner who's played in Europe for like 16, 17 straight seasons, whatever it was.
Hey, come on. You're not allowed to talk sense, Nick. I mean, that goes against the narrative of what Sky Sports and everyone wants, mate. So, come on, stop talking sense.
Yeah, so honestly, I think Olsen, he spent some time in Greece as well, very, very, very briefly, but I'm saying he's played in Europe. I remember him, he also played for Roma, for the top of my head.
Yes, no, he has. So, and he's an international keeper. So I'm not sure what else he can do at the moment.
Exactly. With Olympiacos, they've got a couple of outs. They've got a very big out, and that's one of their wingers, Greek international winger as well, Yorgos Masouras, very pacey. If his finishing was better and his awareness, like staying on side and all that, he would be playing in a big five league for the last few years. So I think he might already be 30 or he's turning 30 now, but he's in career form. He's out suspended for the first leg of Villa Park. And the way we play with our high line, he was the one player I was kind of worried about.
I like that. That's why we need your inside knowledge here, Nick.
See, but as you said, they do score goals. They've got other players that can hurt us. Someone that all Villa fans will know very well, Pedence. I'd imagine he's going to play in this game. I think he's going to start. They've got a couple of strikers, Moroccan strikers. One's a bit older. He's been there for years. El Kabi is like banging in goals in the Conference League as well with Oli. I think they're up there for the leading scorers of that competition. Defensively, they've got one of their centre-backs out suspended, Andreas Doi. They've got Panayotis Retsos returning from suspension. He's a very controversial figure this season amongst their own fan base. He's given them heart attacks. He's a defensive liability. I don't know how he gets called up for the national team still.
Well, isn't that I won't say anything there. But, mate,
their fans are worried. So we just very quickly with him, and they played Fenerbahce over two legs when we were playing Lille. They were 3-0 up in the first leg at home, which really shocked me. I thought they were going to get eliminated there, and then he did one monumental blunder, led to a penalty 3-1. Then it became 3-2, and then they had to do it the hard way on penalties like Villa, and that all came from his one blunder. Imagine Oli and Diaby and Bailey and Rodgers going at him.
Oh, look, I'm pretty excited about it. Mate, this could be an absolutely golden week, and we really hope it is. So I need your score. Now, we're doing a review of the Chelsea game tomorrow afternoon. So we'll have two pods pretty quickly together. So we may revisit Olympiacos again. But your score for the first leg at Villa Park?
I'll go 3-0.
I'm going to go 3-1. I think we'll score first. I think they'll equalise. And then we'll score two goals in the second half. I'm going to go, we take a 3-1 lead back to Greece.
Look, in fairness for them, they'll also be right up for it. This is the first time. The normal person would associate them playing in Europe frequently, which is true. But over their 99-year history, this is the first time they've ever reached the European semi-final.
Wow. And you know what? Talk it down all you want, people who, are just about the Champions League. But once you get to this stage in Europe, it doesn't matter what, if it's conference, if it's Europa, if it's Champions League, you're in a Europe semi-final. If you're not up for it as a supporter or a player, don't bother.
They'll bring the atmosphere up. There's a lot of Greeks living in some. There's actually a decent sized Greek population in Birmingham, but especially London. And I know a couple of people that from my other podcasts that I do that will be, well, they're hoping to go to the first leg coming up, and the second leg's already a sellout. That's sold out in 2 hours.
Yeah, well, look, you don't get a huge contingent of away fans. Deliberately, they hold the numbers back. So anyone who does get to go there from either, Villa when they return to Greece or any of the Greek fans, just have an absolute ball. Enjoy the night, regardless of the results. Because, I just think there's some of the most special moments. And I'm going to ask you really, before we go, I'm going to ask you an important question here. Tomorrow, you're given the ability to finish fourth or win the Europa Conference.
How did I know this was coming?
Because I think we're all thinking similar things.
Well, I've been asked this by mates pretty much all season. My response has been the same from the get-go. I've never seen Villa win a trophy, but stuff it. Now's the time to be greedy. I want it all. I know. I'll give you an answer which one I want more. But honestly, I want both. Now's the time as a Villa fan to be greedy. Let's soak it all in. Let's go for everything. That Arsenal game changed everything when we beat them 2-0 at the Emirates. In my eyes now, we just got to go as full strength as possible for the whole run in and just play off. Like you had Guardiola, for example, whinging about the turnarounds and the games and all that. Like we played Lille off the back of that, a 1 week break and all that. I'm thinking the opposite. I like the fact that we're playing games regularly. But it gets the momentum going, the feel good, the buzz amongst the players and the fans.
It's something to continually look forward to.
Exactly. As fans, this is where we want to be.
I mean, imagine this, right? Imagine being in Birmingham or the outskirts at the moment or people who travel from all over the UK to watch Villa, right? Imagine this. You've got, tomorrow's game against Chelsea and then only a few days later you've got a semi-final of a European competition.
Yeah.
What a magical time to be a villain.
Oh, as I said, I've never seen us win a trophy. As I said at the start, I had those three Martin O'Neill years. This one season alone eclipses those 3 years. It's been a joy. I look forward to all the games. I look forward to soaking in all the Villa-related content with all the podcasts, the shows, your one now and the rest of them and all that. It's just been phenomenal. It's been a joy to watch. Fair play to Emery. In my eyes, he's the manager of the season across the whole league. Ollie is the Premier League player of the season. What about the job Monchi's done with recruitment already? Like the Morgan Rogers unearthing a gem there. NSWE, hats off to you guys. It's crazy when everyone pulls together in one direction, what can be achieved.
And mate, I have been the biggest fan of Adidas jerseys over the years. Your Aussie football supporter who I have a team in almost every league. It's just the way I was brought up to have a team in every comp, right? And I have always loved Adidas jerseys and I cannot wait.
Yeah.
I didn't buy jerseys this season. I normally buy all three and keep the jerseys and everything. For some reason, I didn't this season. But next year, mate, the Adidas ones, I'm going to get them. I'm going to buy two lots, okay? I'm going to buy one lot that I'm never, ever going to do anything with. I may end up getting them framed. And the other lot I'm going to wear everywhere. And when people say, oh, what are those jerseys? I'm going to say, come on, it's the Villa.
Well, not only that, it's going to be our 150th year as well. So they're going to be special jerseys and hopefully we'll be playing Champions League football in those shirts.
Oh, don't. And there'll be another couple of jerseys to buy. So we'll have the home, away.
With the Champions League badge on.
Oh, and then hopefully we also make a run. Let's get real greedy. We actually make a run in an FA Cup where we, for once, we don't have a big team, and we are a big team, and we make the look. If you're going to try and get players, we're going to finish off the pod now. But if you're going to try and get players to the club, imagine this: you've won in Europe, you're playing in the Champions League. You'd want to go to Villa.
Exactly.
I mean, this is, you've got a manager who's going to make you absolutely believe in yourself. You're going to be in a shop window. You're playing Champions League. Imagine
we so deserve this, don't we, as fans? We so deserve this. Remember that relegation season and the seasons leading into that?
Oh, my
God. We so deserve this.
The worst football you could ever imagine. I mean, you didn't even want to watch it, but you did. But yeah. You didn't want to. It was like... It was like kind of like torture porn or something. You don't want to watch it, but it's bringing you in. What's going on? I don't mean torture porn. Literally, I mean movies like Hostel and stuff. You didn't want to watch them, but you couldn't kind of turn away.
Yeah. The turnaround's just been absolutely remarkable.
I did need to clarify that. I don't mean literal stuff. I mean those terrible movies like, the Saw movies and Hostel and all that. But
if I go back to your question, which one, gun to your head scenario, which one do you want more, Champions League or a trophy, a European trophy? I'm taking the Conference League trophy. I've never seen us win a trophy, but I want both,
I'm going to go opposite to you. Yes. I'm going to say Champions League.
That's fair.
For the money it brings in.
Absolutely.
For the play it brings in and the chance to win more trophies. Now, you're not guaranteed. Your point of view is sensational because – you're never guaranteed anything. I mean, you look at Arsenal, who have played beautiful football the last few years, but haven't won anything really, right? So it comes to a point where you do want something to win. So you saying, you know, we finished fifth, miss Champions League, but win a trophy, I cannot disagree with that. You know, I can't disagree with your point of view. I can only give mine.
And people, as you said before, that people are going to knock the Conference League, and that happens across Europe. Even... the Olympiacos, some Olympiacos supporters, mocking it very early in this season. And now here they are in a semi-final. It's still a good league. Look at our run. I saw our run to the semi-finals, and then I saw Liverpool's run to the quarter-finals. Our run was harder than theirs in the Europa League.
And that's what people... I mean, you're discrediting some of Europe where, not you, but when you just wipe off these competitions, you're discrediting some of those teams that don't get as many Champions League spots. You know, so, for example, Scotland won't get as many Champions League spots. Greece, all different places don't get as many Champions League spots. So you're kind of discrediting those leagues in a lot of ways as well.
Well, honestly, even the teams in the big five leagues that don't always play Champions League, like I know yourself and Josh mentioned it last week, Lille. How good were Lille? They would feel so hard done by not to have progressed.
They would feel hard done by, because I thought, you know, for two-thirds of both legs, I thought they were the better team.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's the point of playing in Europe, that you've got to take your chances.
Yeah. No, and that's exactly what we did. But, yeah, no, and I can see what you're saying with the Champions League and the money it brings in. I'm no FFP / PSR expert, but, my very vague enough understanding of it is that, it punishes clubs outside the big six, or that, I hate that term as well, big six, because, is Tottenham really bigger than us?
No.
Exactly.
Probably worldwide supported. And I'm just being honest, you know, I have travelled a fair bit, and I would say that Tottenham would be far more known than Villa. But in the next few years, that's going to change. Mate, we are going to see if we make Champions League and win different things and really push teams in the Premier League title chase, we're going to see so many young kids wearing Villa tops.
It's going to be crazy to see.
Not because their mum and dad told them to or anything like that. We're actually going to see them go... because Adidas is going to be in more stores as well. So you're going to see Villa tops even down the track, you're going to see them in Adidas outlet centres and things like that, which we don't see Castore tops, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So people don't realise, some people may not realise that even Adidas is going to be seen more. It's going to be in Rebel Sports. It's going to be in, Gym Kid in WA and JD Sports and all those kind of places that have those kind of deals with Adidas and so forth. We're going to have our tops out, and some kids are going to go, I like that.
Oh, the colours. And we said our stories with the shirts back then.
Yeah. I mean,
I just don't want to be, now people are going to say, like, people that don't know us, you walk down the street, Villa Jersey, people are going to say, oh, you're on the bandwagon now.
I'm a Richmond supporter in the AFL, right? So people can throw that at me all they like, but I know all the lean years of following Richmond, not being lean following the Storm. So people can call me bandwagon all they want. The people who know us know us. They know who we follow. They know why. So the people who count.
Remember the Bean Sports days, waking up the Champions League. Championship.
Yeah. Oh, mate, look, I'm telling you, from the dark days, and look, in the Championship at one point before we got promoted, we were right down the bottom as well early on in the season. Actually, for about a third of the season.
Yeah, when Dino took over, when Bruce got sacked, that Preston North End game, we were down in the dumps, really. And even when Dino, it was in the winter months in the UK, that 3-0 loss, I think it was Wigan away, we were firmly in the bottom half.
Mate, this is not that many years ago. This is what, you know, this is, if people don't follow Villa and they do for some, you know, per chance listen to this podcast and don't hear the excitement in our voice, this is what football is all about. You know, to have a chance to be Champions League, to have a chance of winning in Europe. Only a few years ago, we were just dross, like horrible. We're to the point where you wanted to be relegated because the football was that bad.
Yeah. And the fact that you could drop down a division and see a team win more games.
And even then, we weren't fantastic to start with. But look, Nick, we're going to do a post-game podcast. So you'll get two pretty close together podcasts. So hoping Nick joins as one of the co-hosts with Josh and myself. We are the Aussie Villains podcast. As you'll know, I'm probably one of the only Aussie voices on these different podcasts, but that's what is the beautiful part of this club. I love your act. I love when you talk about your Greek teams, mate. We need to play more Greek teams because when your accent comes out, your enunciation and pronunciation, love it, Nick.
We'll get hopefully, as you said, fingers crossed, I'll be able to join tomorrow for the post Chelsea that review of that, and we'll get more in depth with Olympiacos. Hopefully, injuries are kind to us. You know, knock on wood in this Chelsea game, everyone comes through unscathed as well. Then we can properly focus on it. It's going to be a big week. Bring it all on. I can't wait. And yeah, look. As I said, they're going to be up for it, Olympiacos. There's going to be no, it's not going to be Legia Warsaw type incidents outside the ground, nothing like that. Greek teams have gone all around Europe this season, the big four in Greece, not one single issue.
No, but they seem happy supporters. They seem like they really love their football, which we already know. I mean, I used to go and see Brisbane Olympic and I used to go and see South Melbourne and so forth. Wait, a South Melbourne Greek?
Yeah, Inch.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Inch Postecoglou.
Yeah. I was about to say, I hope I haven't said the wrong thing there. But yeah, I grew up in Melbourne, so I used to go and see a lot of football and being a skip and going to all the National Soccer League games and, you know, getting Croatian atmosphere and getting the Greek atmosphere, it drew my love of football out even more. And it's the worst thing ever that the A-League did is getting rid of that beautiful ethnicity that we had at those grounds.
Look, I hope there's promotion relegation. That's a story for another day.
It is, mate. Nick, absolute pleasure having you on for your first one. So Nick will be on when he can, and obviously Josh and myself. This is the new lineup for the Aussie Villains podcast. I hope you enjoy our over-enthusiasm. Nick, as always, up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Mate, I've got a couple of things on this afternoon, so I... thanks for joining us for the Aussie Villains podcast. It was Paul and Nick. As we said before, we will be doing a post-Chelsea review tomorrow afternoon. We'll also hopefully have Josh on board. So it'll be three of us, new Aussie Villains podcast, Up the Villa. And let's get those 3 points.